360 WVOX. Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, July 12th, 2012, the 23rd day of summer. We have lost 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 12 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 5:34 this morning. It will set at 8:27 this evening. We will have 14 hours and 53 minutes of daylight today. The moon is up right now in the daytime sky. It will set at 2:57 this afternoon to rise again at 11 past midnight tonight. We are 1 day past last quarter. Next full moon is August 2nd. And while the tides will rise and fall twice in our area today, we do not have the tables available, so sorry. Our regular feature now, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. These men whom we honor today are Specialist Jonathan Batista, age 22, of Kinnelon, New Jersey. He was with the 82nd Airborne, killed by small arms fire in Kandahar Province on July 8th. Corporal Juan P. Navarro, age 23, of Austin, Texas. He was with the 2nd Infantry. He was killed by an IED, an improvised explosive device, in Kandahar on July 7th. Captain Bruce A. McFarlane, age 46, of Oviedo, Florida. He was with the Army Reserve, and he died of a non-battle-related injury in Kandahar as well on July 6th. Staff Sergeant Raul M. Guerra, age 37, of Union City, New Jersey. He was with the 201st Battlefield Surveillance Brigade, also a non-battle-related injury in Spin Boldak, Afghanistan, on July 4th. Private First Class Cody Atho Moosman, age 24, of Preston, Idaho. He was with the 1st Infantry, and he was killed by small arms fire in Paktika Province, July 3rd. These five American servicemen were alive when last we met 2 weeks ago. Sergeant Guerra, whose name, incidentally, in Spanish translates to war, ironically, died on July 4th, our national holiday. And here we are, overeating, indulging ourselves in so many ways, arguing politics as if it really mattered and as if we really make a difference when we vote. For what it is worth, these five died so that we can. War would be on American soil without them. Think of them. Each death is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. These wars end, and no more wars to come. Ha, fat chance. Time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Okay, we saw two things over the last 2 weeks. First of all, we saw on Broadway a play called Clybourne Park. Clybourne Park is a fictional neighborhood based on the real one of Washington Park in Chicago. A house is up for sale in 1938 Chicago. It is purchased by the Hansberry family, and yes, that is the Hansberries, which included Lorraine, playwright of A Raisin in the Sun, which play is true to history. The Hansberries, in real life, were a successful couple with four children. They bought this house, the very house which is portrayed in Clybourne Park. The fly in this particular ointment was that the Hansberries were black, the neighborhood was white, and area homeowners were either racist or concerned about the value of their property, or both. In Clybourne Park, it is a fictional family, Russ and Bev, who sells to a black family. A group of concerned homeowners try to persuade them to renege on the contract. Russ, who is played by Frank Wood, who, like the rest of the cast, originated the role off-Broadway, is none too happy with his neighbors, as they were unsupportive after his son, home from military combat, committed suicide. So it's a hard sell to get him to play musical houses and exclude the family of color, and he does not. That's Act 1. In Act 2, it's 50 years later and the tables have turned. Now a white family wants to move into up-and-coming Clybourne Park. The resistance in this instance comes from establishment black owners, black homeowners who now populate the neighborhood. While I can see the drama and irony in the situation, I feel the playwright Bruce Norris, a white man, by the way, trivializes it. Perhaps that is the best way to note progress. Observe its passing with jokes and farce as if it didn't make a bit of difference. But the jokes are not very funny. Rather, they are crude and racist. Now, I don't mind crude. I can even handle racist jokes if they are funny. I tell a couple of Jewish jokes myself. But funny is the operative word, and these only coax laughs by being outrageous. I laughed at some of them, but then I thought about them and said, you know what? I was laughing out of outrageousness, not out of true humor. I checked with four others who saw this show. Four of us did not especially like it, but one did, as did the Tony Committee, which gave it this year's award for best play, and also the good folks at Pulitzer, who gave their Pulitzer award to this play as well. For my part, I go to theater to have a good time or to be uplifted. I know when I leave the theater whether I had a good time or have been enlightened in some way. Neither was the case when I left the Walter Kerr Theater, 48th Street, just west of Broadway, just east of 8th Avenue. And then the other night we saw The Music Man at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford. This is one of America's most enduring musicals. The Music Man is currently being reprised by the Family Theater Company at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford. Family Theater Company works out of the WBT space, but this is not one of WBT's actual productions. But it is a good one. The story is familiar. We know The Music Man, most of us. Con man Harold Hill comes to River City, Iowa, pretending to be a bona fide music instructor, but really intending to sell the citizenry a bill of goods and escape with the cash. He's been making a living in this way for some time, but here there is a woman, yada, 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 and he has an epiphany and changes his thieving ways. Familiar songs, 76 trombones, Until There Was You, but it is the production number of 76 trombones that steals the show. Excellent choreography. Now, excellent choreography and musical direction in general can be difficult, but the square stage at Westchester Broadway Theater may very well be conducive to movement more so than an average oblong stage or rectangular stage. So choreographers can work very much more expansively. So generally, choreography is usually excellent in the productions here on this particular stage. But it may be that same quality that makes it so hard to get the sound right in this house, which I've kind of given up on even talking about because it's consistently subpar. However, this play is fantastic. Whatever the case, I enjoyed it thoroughly and heartily recommend it to you. For $75, you get the show and a full dinner. Not a gourmet restaurant, but not disappointing either. This show is a winner. Go. Okay, my guest today is Captain Paul Watson, head of the Sea Shepherd Society. He is currently on bail in Germany for actions taken in Costa Rica in 2002. Speaking to us from Frankfurt, Germany, welcome Captain Paul Watson.
Well, thank you.
Good morning. What's the weather like in Frankfurt today, Captain?
Oh, it's between sunny and raining. It's very intermittent.
Okay, we have straight sun here, but I haven't listened to the weather forecast, so I don't know what we're in for. I kind of like rain from time to time, and sunshine can get boring to me. What about you? When you're out on the sea, do you like weather, or just kind of bright, easy weather?
I kind of like the colder weather myself.
And how about the rough seas? Do you feel more like you're working when you have rough seas, or when the sea is just like a lake? I mean, is that which is better?
I kind of prefer it like a lake.
Yeah.
We have to deal with the rough seas enough, so the lake, the flat surfaces are much nicer to deal with.
And it's probably easier to navigate and to chase the bad guys around, right?
Yeah, the advantage of bad weather, though, is that they can't whale, too, so that does slow them down.
Okay, good enough. So now your current situation, as I suggested in the intro, as I said, that you are currently on bail in Germany. Your current situation is you're on 250,000 euros, which is approximately $250,000, I believe, from a German prison, pending extradition to Costa Rica for a 10-year-old charge, something about shark finning. Why now, and is there a statute of limitations?
It's a very strange case. In 2001, we seized an Ecuadorian longliner off of Costa Rica off of Costa Rica's Cocos Island. And we turned it over to the Rangers. And because of that, we were actually given a commendation by Costa Rica, and they invited us to come work with the Rangers at Cocos Island. So we were on our way down to do just that in 2002 when we encountered a longliner in the waters of Guatemala, and it was a Costa Rican longliner, and it was catching and finning sharks. It was highly illegal. We told them to stop. They didn't. We were documenting the whole thing. In fact, it was made into a movie called Shark Water, which won quite a few awards. And so we contacted the Guatemalan government. The Guatemalan government asked us to stop them, so we did. Now, we didn't injure anybody. We didn't damage anything. We just sprayed water hoses on them until they stopped. And then we carried on to Costa Rica, and these fishermen, who had no documentation, although we had film crews all over and documented every minute of it, they put in a complaint that we had threatened their lives. So we were boarded, and I was arrested, and I was charged with attempted murder on these fishermen.
Well, okay.
So we went into the Costa Rican court, and we showed our video footage and presented our witnesses, and they dismissed the charges. So I went back to my ship, and 2 days later, we were boarded again and arrested a second time with a second prosecutor and a second judge appointed.
Okay, Paul.
We went into court, and they dismissed the charges again. So then, 2 days later, I was given permission to leave Costa Rica, and I did. Didn't think anything more of it until May 13th,
okay,
Captain 2012,
Watson,
this year.
Captain Watson,
I landed in Frankfurt.
I'm going to have to cut you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Levinsohn. My guest is Captain Paul Watson of Sea Shepherd, and we will be right back.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox Business Network, Wall Street is extending losses for a sixth straight session despite some better-than-expected news on the labor market. Concerns over the global economy continue to weigh heavily on the markets here in the U.S., and at 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow is down about 90 points. Jobless claims fell to a four-year low last week, with 350,000 people filing for first-time benefits. It also marked the third straight week of declines. The Labor Department did caution seasonal factors contributed to last week's figures. Import prices posted their biggest drop in more than 3 years in June due to falling oil prices. Overall, import prices fell 2.7% from May, a full percentage point lower than the estimate. Export prices also fell more than expected, marking a second straight month of declines. And Walgreens named former McDonald's chief executive James Skinner as the new non-executive chairman of its board of directors. Skinner has served on the pharmacy company's board since 2005. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Diane Macedo.
Do you want to lose all your money? Well, I've got some bad news for you. The stock market is a rigged game, and it's rigged against you. What Wall Street doesn't want you to know is that there is a way you can protect and grow your wealth. The people using this approach didn't lose a penny when the market crashed in 2000 or 2008, and they won't lose a penny in the next crash. A free report detailing this savings program is now available. To get this free report, visit bankonyourself.com. That's bankonyourself.com. Bankonyourself.com.
You're listening to America's great community radio station from Westchester, the Golden Apple. This is WVOX Worldwide, AM 1460 and WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Society. Paul is explaining to us what happened back in Costa Rica and why the charges 10 years later, although nobody really understands why the charges are being brought 10 years later. Continue, Paul, please.
Well, I landed at the airport in Frankfurt. I was on my way to southern France, and I found myself arrested on this extradition warrant, which is rather strange because I hadn't heard a thing about it for 10 years. And then I found out that Interpol had dismissed the warrant as being politically motivated. So if I had landed in Paris or London or Madrid, nothing would have happened. But Germany, for some reason, acted on the warrant, and I was arrested. I was held for 8 days in the prison and then released on a €250,000 bond. And now it's been about 60 days since then, and I'm still waiting for the courts to make a decision on this.
And that's roughly $250,000, is it not? This approximate parity between euros and dollars?
About $300,000, yeah.
$300,000. So you don't understand why no other country would have. Germany did. Interpol themselves said it was politically motivated. So where does Germany, if it's not an Interpol warrant, Germany, what's Germany's situation?
Germany also doesn't have an extradition treaty with Costa Rica, which is even stranger, but Germany hasn't answered that question. But we do have an incredible support base here in Germany, in the public, the media, and pretty much all around the world, really. The German justice minister has received about 140,000 letters, and it's a big campaign.
Good.
Here's the other thing, too, is that the shark fin mafia, the people behind the shark finning trade in Costa Rica, put a $25,000 reward on my head for anybody who could kill me,
really?
Which meant that being in a jail in Costa Rica is not a very safe place. Now, I met with the Costa Rican foreign minister in Stuttgart when he was here, and I said, look, you can drop the extradition award order, and I will come to Costa Rica with our film and our witnesses, and we'll go to trial. I don't mind doing that. But I don't want the extradition because that means you'll bring me there in handcuffs, hold me in jail for up to a year until you decide to have a court date, and anything could happen. But they're not willing to do that, which doesn't make any sense.
So, but just tell me, by what authority did German arrest you if Interpol suspended the warrant? Did I hear you right?
Germany hasn't explained that. We're still waiting for the court to make a ruling on that.
But do they have a legal right to arrest you? You didn't violate any German rules, and Interpol says you're not an internationally wanted guy, right?
No, but Germany said that since they received the extradition order, that they can make the decision on whether it's valid or not outside of Interpol's jurisdiction.
So there's politics going on here somehow. It's not just national
pride.
Obviously,
the other thing, too, is that in December, when this warrant was issued, the Prime Minister of Costa Rica, the President of Costa Rica met with the Prime Minister of Japan, and this issue was discussed, and shortly thereafter, this warrant was issued. Now, the interesting thing about it is last October, Japan allocated $30 million from the Tsunami Relief Fund specifically to come after Sea Shepherd with security. They laid charges against us in the United States. They lost. They've hired PR firms to try and stop us. And we believe that this is part of it, too. And coincidentally, maybe, I don't know, but last week, Costa Rica received $9 million from Japan for their national park.
Oh, that's just a coincidence, of course.
Yeah.
So is there a statute of limitations on this, or does that not apply in international affairs like this?
There is a statute of limitations, but they can't seem to decide whether it was last year, 2013 or 2016. We're getting three different opinions on that. The other thing is that Germany asked questions to Costa Rica 4 weeks ago, which they still haven't received answers on. Questions including, like, was this in Guatemalan waters? Did Sea Shepherd have Guatemalan authority? And they haven't answered those questions.
So in your best guess, are you going to be released and is this going to drop, or are they going to pursue it and extradite you somehow?
Well, I don't think that Germany will extradite me because if anything happens to me in a Costa Rican jail, Germany will be held responsible, and we have so much support over here. But what would happen is that the court rules that I will not be extradited. Of course, I'll be released. If they rule that I would be extradited, then it falls to the minister to make a political decision, and she can actually then decide that I will not be extradited. If she decides that yes, then we'll have to appeal to the European Parliament and the European Court.
Okay, so now let's say Japan is behind all this, and let's just follow the money, $9 million to Costa Rica from Japan. Japan's motivation would be to impact your operations in the South Australian Sea off Antarctica, where the Japanese fleet is illegally poaching whales and killing them and bringing them back to Japan. And one of your main missions, certainly your most visible one, is stopping that activity down there. What happens to your activities if you are out of commission?
Well, we've cost some tens of millions of dollars down there. Last year this year they took 26% of their quota, last year 17%. We've saved over 4,000 whales in our campaigns. So they're extremely upset about that, of course. But nothing will happen. We will be going down there this year stronger than ever with four ships and two helicopters. And we will make a bigger impact than ever before. I really believe that, because every year we go down stronger than the year before. If I'm not available to take command, I have competent captains and a competent crew, and they will certainly be able to do the job without me.
So in other words, the Sea Shepherd mission is not impacted at all, whether you're there or not.
No,
and
not at all.
In fact, if you happen to be incarcerated for whatever reason, which I kind of don't think is going to happen, but let's say it happened, your presence in jail might actually inspire them to even work harder in that name.
That's quite possible. I think Japan's mistake is in thinking that if they take me out of the equation, that the whole thing will fall apart, and that just isn't going to happen. Right now, we have a campaign in the South Pacific protecting sharks in Fiji, Vanuatu, Malaysia, and in New Caledonia, and it's going along just fine under the leadership of the campaign leaders there.
Now, did I notice that you have a female captain, or did I mistake? Am I mistaken about that?
Julie Anderson is our campaign leader for our projects in Fiji and New Caledonia, and Lamia Masali, she's the campaign leader in Malaysia.
Okay, she's not a ship captain.
No, but she is in charge of the campaign.
But of course, you do have women aboard the vessels.
About 30% of our crew are women every campaign.
Yeah, I've noticed, I've seen the pictures, and they're tough-looking women, and it's wonderful to see them out there. The Japanese have, what is the number? Well, you know what? Let's stop it here. We'll take our break, and after the break, we'll talk about why in the world Japan even bothers with us. You are listening to... Okay. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Hohokus, New Jersey, Bogota, New Jersey, or Columbia, South Carolina, or Columbus, Ohio, or Georgia, Kennesaw, Georgia, or Mountain City, Tennessee, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. I am Bob Levinsohn. This program is Environmentally Sound. My guest today is Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Society. He speaks to us from Frankfurt, Germany, where he is out on bail. Costa Rica wants him to answer charges, 10-year-old charges. Actually, it's probably Japan that is behind all of this, and we'll get back to that in just a minute. We will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter.
Our hearts and prayers are with the many children, now young men, who were the victims of a now convicted serial pedophile.
Former FBI Director Louis Free, whose investigation of the Penn State sex scandal determined that the late football coach Joe Paterno, the university's former president, and two other administrators looked the other way when assistant coach Jerry Sandusky was accused 11 years ago of molesting young boys.
Mr. Spanier, Schultz, Paterno, and Curley never demonstrated, through actions or words, any concern for the safety and well-being of Sandusky's victims until after Sandusky's arrest.
Sandusky was convicted of 45 crimes related to the abuse. Another day of declines on Wall Street. The Dow is off 94 points. Analysts say it's because of more worry about European debt. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Now in Westchester, for corporate travel, executive transportation, and custom limousine service, the leader, clearly, is Excel. After two decades in the county, Rich Guberti's Excel Transportation Service does just that. Specializing in sedans, limos, and 14-passenger vans, Excel is the new class of the fleet and the Westchester leader in terms of cars, service, resources, and the quality of their Excel drivers. Most of the Golden Apple's blue-chip companies have, in fact, in recent years, switched to Excel for local transportation and city-to-city service to Washington, Albany, Baltimore, Hartford, Boston, and Philadelphia at rates even less than rail or air. And you can use them too for a trip into town, the airport, or any special occasion. Call President Rich Guberti at Excel Headquarters, EXCEL Transportation, 576-9797, 914-576-9797. These days in Westchester, the new car service leader, because Excel excels. 576-9797. 9797.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Updated weather forecast for today, calling for mostly sunny conditions. Our temperatures for your Thursday in the upper 80s, northeast winds becoming southeast this afternoon, then mostly clear for tonight. Evening readings near 80, overnight lows in the middle 60s. Friday's looking sunny, highs for the day into the upper 80s, and partly cloudy at night. Nighttime lows down to around 70. Could be some showers overnight. It'll be clouds and sun both Saturday and Sunday each day with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Muggy weather this weekend, temperatures in the upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
No matter where you go.
Driving in truck all day long.
Driving to work.
We're right there with you. WVOX Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Society. Just to bring you up to speed, Captain Watson is, I don't want to say the star of, but he is the principal player in Whale Wars, which is a documentary on, I believe, the Animal Planet, which tracks his actions against the Japanese poaching vessels in the South Pacific Ocean in Australian waters. And he's also the one who has inspired the documentation of the slaughter of the baby harp seals on the Newfoundland ice. Welcome back, Captain Paul Watson.
Thank you.
And now, we're talking about Japan's motivations. You do harass their boats, and you've caused them major grief, and you've caused them to bring back much less whale meat. But it seems to me that I've heard somewhere that there are 6,000 tons of whale meat in deep freeze in Japan, so it's not like they need this stuff. What's going on with that?
Well, our objective from the beginning was to sink the Japanese whaling fleet economically, to bankrupt them. Well, we've accomplished that. We've cost them tens of millions of dollars. And at the same time, the demand for whale meat has gone down significantly. So as you said, there's 6,000 tons of it in the market. But it's no longer, it seems, about whaling anymore. Last September, the prime minister said that he would not surrender to sea shepherds. So he's treating us like we're some sort of foreign country that they're at war with. So really, it's down to a matter of pride right now.
So where's Australia in all of this?
What's that?
Where's Australia in all of this? This is their waters, their national waters. Why do they tolerate this? Is there something else
we
don't know?
Australia's taken Japan to the international court in The Hague, but that won't be decided for another 2 years or so.
That's like the International Whaling Commission, right? These guys like to talk and wave their arms and all, and nothing, and whales die in the meantime. Isn't that so?
Yes, this government is really actually strange in Australia. Their campaign promise was to get tough on this whole thing and go down there. And, of course, as soon as they got elected, they did nothing. The actual previous government was doing more. In fact, the former Environment Minister of Australia is now on the Sea Shepherd Advisory Board. And he was much tougher than the current government. But, we never, ever expect anything out of governments anyway. You know, governments cause problems. They don't solve problems. That's always been my experience anyway.
Right. They sometimes get the roads right, and they sometimes provide electricity. But that's about all. Wars are usually useless. Occasionally there's a valid war, but usually they're just moving material and men's around and people around and I don't know, waving their arms, like I said. Okay, so the Japanese are not a big whale eating. It's not like they have big restaurants which specialize in whale meat. It's not like it's a very popular thing there. Anyway, so it's just pride? It's just ego? Is that what's going on here?
Well, it was. Commercial whaling was introduced to Japan by General Douglas MacArthur after World War II in order to provide cheap protein to the Japanese people. And for older Japanese people, yes, there's sort of a nostalgic sort of a thing for it. But younger Japanese people are not really eating whale meat. So the market has been dying as that older generation has been dying out. So, but really, here's the other problem too: is there's this thing in Japan that when people retire from government, they're given very high-paying jobs with different government agencies. And one of those agencies is the Institute for Cetacean Research. So these guys have got jobs a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, and they don't want to lose those jobs. So they very stubbornly keep hold of their jobs and keep the ICR active. And the only way they can do that is by keeping whaling going.
And what about the International Whaling Commission?
The International Whaling Commission makes rules and regulations, but they have no power of enforcement. They're basically, they've been passing rules for years, and everybody's just simply been ignoring them. Norway, by the way, doesn't even pretend to do it for scientific whaling. They just go out and kill whales in blatant defiance of the IWC regulations, and nobody can do anything about it. Well, they could in practice. For instance, the United States, under the Department of Commerce regulations, has the power to embargo those countries which violate the IWC regulations. But every president from Ronald Reagan to Barack Obama has simply chosen to ignore those regulations. And instead, every year, they send a strongly worded letter of protest to Iceland, to Norway, and to Japan, which those countries just promptly throw in the wastebasket, and that's the end of the story.
So the poaching actually doesn't come from it's not an Australian law. It's an IWC law, International Whaling Commission regulation that says you can't do this. What am I missing?
Well, the Japanese are killing whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, and the International Whaling Commission set that up as a sanctuary. You don't kill whales in a sanctuary, and so there can be no excuse for that. But they're also in violation of Australian law because Australia passed a court order saying they could not do this. So Japan is now in contempt of that court order. So the interesting thing is that when Japan brought a case against us in the United States this year, the judge on the case ruled, well, let me see, you're in contempt of an Australian federal court order and you come into my court asking us to do something about it. So they lost their request to get an injunction against us for that reason.
Okay, so now you mentioned Norway and Iceland. They just go out and they say, forget about the IWC. It's meaningless. They don't have any ships. They don't have any guns. We're going to do what we want. If they want to come after us, let them come after us. They just go and kill whales. How do you feel about that? They're still wonderfully intelligent cetaceans that are being slaughtered. Is there more of a case for the Scandinavians to do that? Is it more of a food resource for them? Or how do you feel about that?
In 1986, we sank half of Iceland's whaling fleet at dockside in Reykjavik Harbor.
Was that one ship?
In 1987, I turned myself into the Icelanders to be arrested for that. They threw me out of the country. They refused to press charges against me because they knew that if they put me on trial, they'd be putting themselves on trial.
So how many ships is half of their fleet? Two of their four. And Norway, I presume, would be more formidable.
Norway, we took out four of their boats.
Really? Wow. Now, most activist organizations and activist individuals talk. You don't just talk. You walk the walk, don't you?
Yes, and we operate within the bounds of practicality and with the law. And also, we've never injured anybody. That's one of our, to cause no injury is a basic foundation of our organization. In 35 years, we never caused a single injury. And for instance, I was given a lecture a couple of years ago to the FBI Academy in Quantico, and one of the FBI agents said, well, Sea Shepherd's walking a pretty fine line when it comes to the law. And I said, yeah, but it doesn't matter how fine it is as long as you don't step over that line. And we don't.
Well, of course. People use that all the time. The police use it. The criminals use it. The courts use it. There is a line. That's it. It's the line. So we're talking about other countries, Norway and Iceland, Japan, those are big whalers. Now you say Korea is thinking about getting into whaling. What's that about? Is it a valuable food resource for them?
It's a complicated situation in Korea because Korea has been criticizing Japan for years for their so-called scientific whaling. But the problem is that the Korean fishermen have been taking whales illegally in their fish nets. Accidentally, they say, but the accidental take of whales in Korean fishnets is equal to the accidental take of whales in all the rest of the world put together. So the Korean fishing agency decided that, well, if Japan's going to get away with this scientific whaling, we're going to do the same thing. So they said they would go whaling for scientific purposes too. But in the last 2 days, that's been turned around. The Korean government has said, no, we're not going to do it.
Excellent.
In response to massive protests from their own people, from the media, and from Australia, the United States, and Latin American blocs, and from the Europeans. So Australia, the Korea will not be going whaling.
So did you say the Koreans have their take is greater than all the other whaling countries in the world?
No, I'm saying that their take in fishnets accidentally is greater than all the other countries in the world's take in fishnets.
Oh, okay.
So the loophole for them is that if a whale gets accidentally taken in a fishnet, they can harvest it. But they seem to be an awful lot of them being accidentally taken. It's the same thing in, for instance, in Costa Rica and Panama and Ecuador, where the law says that if a shark is taken accidentally in a net, it can be harvested. And suddenly the takes in the nets increase dramatically.
Well, you know, that's one ploy. The other ploy is research. Now, first of all, there are too many for that to be credible in any way. It's just a bunch of crap. But what research do you even need? I mean, why we research all kinds of species. The scientists capture them, tag them, put collars on them, send them back out, and they're free again. You don't have to kill them to research them. What kind of research is that?
Well, in 1986, the International Whaling Commission condemned commercial whaling and put a moratorium on it. It's indefinite. And the next year, Japan came out with this thing of so-called scientific research permit whaling. They haven't published a single peer-reviewed scientific paper on this so-called research since 1987, since they started. And also, the number of whales actually killed in research from 1950 to 1987 was 900. The number of whales killed for so-called research since 1987 has been nearly 20,000.
But tell me how you research something by killing it. I mean, what are you researching, the size of its kidneys?
They research, like, for instance, like, you know, what they eat or anything. But, you know, it's all stuff they already know already. It's sort of like, how many more whales must we kill to discover what we already know they eat?
Okay, Captain Watson, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. If you're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Blow Me Down, Newfoundland, Floyd's Knobs, or Santa Claus, Indiana, Hump Tulips, Washington, Toads Suck, Arkansas, Frogs Suck, Wyoming, Monkey's Eyebrow, Kentucky, No Name, Colorado, Knock 'em Stiff, Ohio, or Condom, France, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. I am Bob Loventhal. This program is Environmentally Sound. Captain Paul Botson will be back with us in just a moment, and we will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The former head of the FBI in a report out this morning calling the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal a terrible tragedy that was allowed to occur.
The most powerful men at Penn State failed to take any steps for 14 years to protect the children who Sandusky victimized.
Louis Free, who led the independent probe.
He names former President Graham Spanier, Vice President Gary Schultz, Athletic Director Tim Curley, and former head coach Joe Paterno as failing to take any steps for 14 years. Penn State is not publicly commenting yet. A committee, including the Board of Trustees, is currently studying the lengthy report.
Fox Radio's Courtney Keeley. Stocks on Wall Street sliding on worries about Europe's debt crisis and the pace of global growth. Meanwhile, last week's first-time jobless numbers down to their lowest in nearly 4 years. The decline, though, partly due to temporary factors. Fox News, we report, you decide.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in New Rochelle in the narrow Waikagil walkway across the parking lot from the A&P, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something very special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or how small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers, it's Minuteman Press. Down that walkway when you're heading to the A&P, offering quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. 914-576-0335.
We make it very easy for you to get on the air and talk to your neighbors.
Could someone talk to me?
And the world.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
The podium is yours.
Impressive.
AM 1460 and worldwide at WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Society, perhaps the greatest activist in the world today, who's actually out there walking the walk, not just talking the talk, as so many people do. Captain Watson, let's talk for a minute about your critics. You helped to found Greenpeace, which is probably the best known activist organization, but you left them. You've been highly critical of them, and they, in turn, are critical of you. What is going on with that? What happened with Greenpeace? What was your role in its founding, and what happened between you guys?
I was the youngest founding member of Greenpeace in 1969 when it was called the Don't Make a Wave Committee. We changed the name to the Greenpeace Foundation in 1972, and I was the first officer on all the early voyages from until 1977. I left Greenpeace in 1977 because I got tired of watching whales die. Banner hanging just wasn't working for me. I felt that there was rules and regulations that were being broken, and we decided to intervene to do that. So I set Sea Shepherd up as an anti-poaching organization. And we actually worked with Greenpeace until 1982, and they were very supportive. In fact, I was a founding member of Greenpeace International in 1989. Now, actually, it's really funny. On their website, they deny that I was a founder. But, you know, you can't change history even if you stick it on a website. There's our books and magazines and newspapers that say otherwise. I don't know. We asked them for cooperation to work with them. But, you know, Greenpeace has become a very, very big corporation these days. It brings in about $400 million a year. And when you become that big, you're run by your accountants and your lawyers and your fundraisers and PR people, and you can't really do anything anymore. Oh,
and by your donors, the actual contributors, the people who, the corporations that fund you just to shut you up very often.
That's true, and it's happened quite a bit with them. I mean, they just built a $30 million boat, but all it does is go on fundraising tours. It hasn't done a single campaign since it was built a year ago.
So may I ask where your funding comes from, and how come you're immune to such political influence?
We keep our organization small deliberately. We don't spend money on fundraising efforts. It's a word of mouth sort of organization. We've grown slowly. Our budget, thanks to Whale Wars, the TV show, has grown to about $12 million a year, which is pretty small compared to Greenpeace and the other groups. But we're an organization that's primarily run by volunteers. And, you know, the passion of my crew members is what makes a difference. I couldn't pay people to do these things that these people do for free. If it wasn't for our international crew of volunteers on the ships and on shore, we wouldn't be able to accomplish anything. And that's really what makes the difference between our group and most everybody else, is that this is a volunteer-driven organization.
Yeah, just as a little side, I have in the past considered volunteering to crew on one of your ships. It's a little complicated. It didn't work out, but that's the way I feel about what you do. You've also been criticized, and of course somebody in your position is going to be criticized, and as you said, some people will hire public relations firms because they want you to lose credibility. One critique that I have read about you is that, and I don't see anything wrong with this, but they do, they say you go to the International Whaling Commission and you harass them rather than actually entering into the discussion. Does that really happen, or is that just made up of whole cloth? And if it does happen, what's up with that?
Well, since 1987, I've been banned from the International Whaling Commission meetings. I'm not allowed to attend. So I do go, and because I'm not allowed to attend, I sit in the lobby of the hotel and talk to the reporters. I guess they look on that as harassment. I guess the Japanese get very intimidated. They refuse to walk through a whole hotel lobby that I'm in. But I usually book a room about a year in advance, so the hotel can't kick me out.
Under an assumed name, perhaps?
So I guess they call that harassment.
Okay. Now, personally, you are a vegetarian, right?
Yes, and we promote veganism on our ships because 40% of all of the fish that's taken out of our ocean is fed to livestock, to pigs, to chickens, to farm-raised salmon, and to domestic house cats. You know, domestic house cats eat more fish than all the world's seals put together.
No, I didn't know that. Tell me, though, if I were to volunteer and I needed a ham sandwich, would I not be allowed to have that on board? I'm not a vegan, and
you only serve vegan food on board. You don't have to be a vegan to be a crew member. You don't have to be a vegetarian to be a crew member, but it's not served in our galleys or or in our mess rooms.
And if I carry jerky with me, that'd be frowned on.
As long as nobody knows about it.
No, actually, I've interviewed Ingrid Newkirk of PETA, and she understands that not everybody is on the same page. And in fact, you know about Temple Grandin. Do you know who she is?
Yes, I know who she is. I don't really know if I approve of what she does, but I know who she is.
Okay, all right. Well, what she does is she simply has created, and she's autistic, of course. She created systems for the harvesting of a cattle and I guess other animals that are raised for the specific purpose of food. And she eats meat, but she is a humanitarian when it comes to. I don't like to use the word slaughter. Let's say the harvesting of it. You don't agree with her necessarily. I mean, are you an avid vegan, or are you just saying?
It reminds me of, I remember years ago, I lived in Toronto when I was a kid, and we went down to the slaughterhouse, which was right there in the middle of town. And what I saw there was very disturbing one time, where I saw this one cow that every day would cross the road, followed by all of the other cows. And it was the same cow every day. And I said, what is that cow? They don't kill it. They said, that's a Judas cow.
Right.
What is it? Oh, it leads the other ones to slaughter. And so that's what her work reminds me of.
Okay, well, we could talk about her, but let's not. So actually, you not only walk the walk, but you live the life as well. What other campaigns do you have? We know about documenting the slaughter of baby harp seals on the ice in Newfoundland. We know about the whales. The critics of your work with the seals, now they're not only critics, they've destroyed one of your boats, I think, up there as well, confiscated, and I think Alex, one of your captains, was arrested and locked up. You have suggested that the harp seals are actually endangered, whereas their argument, the Canadian government argument, you are Canadian national, right?
I'm Canadian and American.
Canadian and American. Canadian government says, first of all, it's legal. Second of all, harp seals are not endangered. And third of all, it provides a living, or at least extra boost financially for those hunters, if you can call hunting, clubbing a baby that looks at you with moon eyes. What do you have to say about that operation?
It's a temporary source of income, and the Canadian government spends about $12 million a year to subsidize an industry that only brings in $1 million a year, so it makes no economic sense whatsoever. We'd be better off just to give the sealers $1 million a year, and we'd be saving $11 million. I believe that they're in danger because of climate change. The ice conditions are getting less and less every year. More seals are dying or from drowning when they're born because of the ice conditions, and this is becoming more and more of a problem. You know, when you consider that in the 1500s, when Jacques Cartier first came to the west, to the east coast of Canada, there were about 45 million seals, including the walrus, which is now extirpated on the east coast. Now there's under 4 million, so they're less than 10% of their original number. And, you know, we never had any problems back then with lack of fish. In fact, if you want a healthy fish population, you need a healthy marine mammal population, because there's a balance, a cycle there that works. It's human greed that's destroyed the fish, not the seals.
Of course.
So, yes, I'm totally opposed to it. I think that there's a danger we could wipe out the harp seals because of this. And the Canadian government's being very unreasonable. They take incredible quotas, like 450,000 seals. But now I think, though, that we've won this because we've managed to get seal products banned in most everywhere in the world. So even though the quota was 450,000 seals, the kill was 38,000, because there's simply no markets left. And that was the key to success. We speak the language they understand, which is economics. Destroy the market and you win the battle.
Right. Now, I've actually stopped buying anything made in Canada because of your campaign. So, you know, it's a slight effect that you multiply me by whatever to see how many people are affected by that. But I have, and until Canada stops that process, unless something Canadian slips in, I won't buy any of their products. And I consider Canada a friendly neighbor. I don't have any animosity against Canada. But in this particular case, economically, I do support you.
Okay, when will you, we know what's happening with this Costa Rica thing in the minute we have left?
Oh, I have no idea. Actually, it could stretch on for some time, but you know, I'm concentrating more on turning this into a campaign to focus on shark finning and the fact that Costa Rica is heavily involved in the illegal trade. And by the way, shark finning is also a cover for the drug trade. A lot of drugs are being sent to Asia from Latin America, frozen inside fish. And so that's another thing that's bringing in a lot of money and buying a lot of influence in this particular industry.
Whoa. Well, that's dramatic. I hadn't read anything about that or heard anything about that. Well, you know, we could go on and on and on and on, but I think we can leave it at that. Captain, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Hopefully we'll do it many more times and certainly try to stay out of trouble. You know, I worry about you, so take care. And Kelly,
okay, thank you.
Kelly, I know you're listening. Please look out for Paul. Don't let him, you know, if you see him taking a step that could be dangerous, at least blow a whistle or something. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Society for taking the time to join us today. No matter what his detractors say, Paul walks the walk. He risks his life to save ocean life. He has been shot at, and in fact, he used to wear a bulletproof vest aboard the vessels in the South Pacific, but now for some reason Australia has banned bulletproof vests, and he's not allowed to wear it. I have no idea what that's all about. Some decry his tactics. He is confrontational, but so were our founding fathers. Martin Luther King, Jesus Christ, Mahatma Gandhi, and others have also stood up for what they believed was right. History is rife with martyrs who would not go along and just talk about things. Politicians have to talk about things down to an art, but if Captain Watson were to just talk about things, tens of thousands of whales would be dead and Japan would continue the slaughter with impunity. I applaud him. Our thought for the week, polite conservationists leave no mark save the scars upon the earth that could have been prevented had they stood their ground. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio. Next up, Howard Sterman. I'm Bob Levinsohl. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health.
Official summertime station.
It's just a fun station to listen to, especially in the summer.
WVOX and WVIP HD4 New Rochelle.